Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
True Cramers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. I am sorry for being 6 minutes late. I think this is the latest I've ever been. I always like to get started on time. But I want to thank everybody who normally is with us for being here. And for anyone new, we are a fact-based channel. I'm going to go through facts. Everything that we look at and discuss is through a law enforcement lens. I love to read everyone's comments afterwards because you all are the people that serve on juries. You guys, your comments and feedback, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate it because it really just opens, I think, everybody's window to other thoughts and ideas. So thank you all for your feedback. We're going to get right into it. We're going to be talking today about the Menendez brothers. There's a lot that has gone on with the Menendez brothers very recently. So you'll recall that the LA, the Los Angeles District Attorney, had wanted to put forth and put the Menendez brothers in the hands of a judge for resentencing. Then he was removed from office. That was DA Gascon. And now there is a new sheriff in town, so to speak, a new district attorney. His last name is Hockman. Mr. Hockman does not want the boys, Eric and Lyle Menendez, resentenced. And he has very strong reasons for that, primarily being he believes they have not accepted responsibility for what they did. That, in other words, they're really not even admitting to it from the standpoint of being honest with the circumstances surrounding why they committed this murder. Before we get into all the details, because we're going to go back in time and we're going to go through time as to where we are now, I want to just say my thoughts and prayers go out to the aunt of Lyle and Eric Menendez. She's 85 years old. She has colon cancer. It's been very important to her to support Lyle and Eric. And she's done so, and she had a setback. And I just want to say that very much thoughts and prayers are with her. All right. So I want to put a few photos up on the screen here. Let's start with this. I just want to bring us back, not how they look now, but how they looked then. This, I always thought, was some of the really iconic representation of the iconic pictures of them. You can see, of course, Lyle with his toupee. You can see Eric there, obviously at their defense table as trial was going on. But I want to talk about the victims. So I want to put them up. I'm just going to leave my glasses on tonight. I actually have a pair that aren't broken. Almost all my glasses are broken. But I want to add in here this picture of them. And I apologize. It does look to be quite small here. But this is Katie and Jose Menendez, obviously with Lyle and Eric. And it was their last photo that was taken together before this murder. And I just, I think it's very important that when we're discussing these cases, we don't lose track of the victims. I think it happens all the time where the focus really goes on the people who committed the murders. And there is no doubt, this isn't, you know, confusing for anybody, that they, Eric and Lyle, committed these murders. But I want to talk in detail about these murders. I want to talk in detail about how meticulously everything was planned, because I think this is super important. So to recall specifically, they were murdered on August 20th, 1989. I want to take you back to that time frame. Some of you might not have even been alive then, but this is back when a can of soda was 25 cents. This was a time of, you know, really pretty much flourishing for the most part in the United States. And on this particular day, Eric and Lyle Menendez, armed with shotguns, loaded shotguns, loaded with birdshot. I want to be very specific. They were not shot with slugs. They were shot with birdshot. Now, birdshot, as opposed to even buckshot, has a very specific load. In other words, you might imagine it's meant to kill birds, but there are varying degrees of birdshot. There's number 4, there's number 8, 7.5. Birdshot, how it is ranked in terms of its numbering has to do with how big the load is, those pellets that are inside of the shotgun shell, and how many are in there. It is believed that Lyle and Eric used 7.5 or 8 birdshot. What does that mean? Well, that means that they had approximately somewhere between about 375 to about 400 bullets per load, meaning per the shotgun shell that was loaded and shot at them. I just want to explain this very specifically, because if you look at a shotgun slug, these are gigantic. There's only one. It's gigantic. It's absolutely explosive. But these pellets are also so deadly because of the number of them and also because of the close range. When they entered their home on this particular evening, recall that Kitty and Jose were in their den area watching television. There are many accounts from Eric Menendez, you know, from Eric, he was the one that told others this, that they were actually asleep. But nevertheless, they were absolutely ambushed, surprised, shocked. This wasn't a fight that got out of control or something like this. No, this was an absolute ambush as they sat on their sofas. I'm going to add sort of pictures. They're at a distance, but if you don't want to look, please look away right now. But I want you to understand, and again, these are mooted and very small, but I want you to understand that Jose Menendez was shot 6 times with approximately 400 pellets per round. So you're now talking about 400 times 6, 2,400 projectile bullets coming at him, enough to take down birds at a far distance. These are very lethal. Literally, and I don't want to get too descriptive, but I'll say it gently, the back of Jose Menendez's head was no more after, I believe, the second shot. It was no more. Kitty Menendez was shot 10 times. Jose was shot five. Kitty was shot five. But Kitty didn't die right away. She went to the ground and was sort of crawling around. And that's why you see her position is sort of under the table, under the, you know, kind of their table, sofa table. They left. Eric and Lyle Menendez left and went outside where their additional ammunition was. And they reloaded. They came back inside after reloading, shot Jose again, complete overkill. Guess what they did to their mother? She's already shot five times, a wounded situation on the ground. Shot her straight in the face. Kitty Menendez died faceless. Shot her five more times for a total of 10. This was absolutely and completely malicious anger, in my opinion, when you see this type of overkill. Now, I'm going to discuss this a little bit further or take this down a little bit different road. But as we look at what happened, I want to talk about the preparation for this. Now, getting ammunition and a shotgun in Texas, even at the age of 19, is no problem at all in Texas and in Arizona and in Kansas, in all those states that are now constitutional carry states and back then had very liberal, if not constitutional carry laws, even back then. But this was California. So they had to go to multiple stores, fill out paperwork to acquire these weapons and their ammunition. So this wasn't just a last minute, oh, you know what? I'm going to go down to Dick's Sporting Goods. I'm going to buy a gun. Let's go right now. And then we're going to come back and kill them. No, this was well planned, well thought out. And they had organized everything and made sure they had what they needed to commit this murder. They also thought about an alibi. These guys weren't dumb by any stretch of the imagination. They were very well educated. Lyle had actually been accepted into Princeton with some help from Daddy. Of course, he was quickly removed. Actually, they were going to completely expel him, but Daddy came to the rescue, and he wasn't expelled. He was put on a probation. And guess what it was for? It was for lying, cheating, plagiarizing, right? Plagiarizing. Which isn't allowed in Princeton. It's not allowed in any institution, but particularly in Princeton. But Daddy got him a pass. And so he was allowed to stay on the books and be in this suspended nature. But they were concerned about an alibi. They had this great idea. Listen, we'll get movie tickets. We'll get Batman was the movie they were going to see. Batman movie tickets. There was a problem. There was a stamp on the ticket regarding purchase times. That was not going to work. That was not going to work because the murder was already over. So they instead diverted and said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go to the Taste of LA, which was in Santa Monica. Big time, lots of fun. We're going to do that. Which they did, but their alibi completely fell apart. As you can imagine, they wanted a friend to meet them there. It fell apart and was no longer really an alibi that was going to hold. Now, after the murders were committed, because when they returned to the house from this Taste of LA and returned to the house from burying their shotguns on Mulholland Drive, which is where they chose to bury them, and discarding all their extremely bloody clothes, as I'm sure you can imagine after a crime like this and the spray that would be involved. They then returned home. Get a picture of their mansion up here, because it was nothing short of a mansion, a beautiful mansion. And for those of you who do not know, Jose Menendez was a made man. What I mean by that is he was a son of Cuban immigrants. He absolutely did not come from money, wealth of any kind. And essentially, he made himself completely from nothing to living in a Beverly Hills gorgeous mansion, being worth millions and millions and millions of dollars, and being an executive in the movie industry. You know, what dreams are made of, if you will. He died in his 40s. He was young. He had decades potentially ahead of him. He was really at his absolute prime. I say this because, again, everybody forgets about the victim. Kitty, same situation, meaning not old. Let me put this picture up here again of them. Did she have problems? Yes. Was she, you know, did she drink too much? So it has been said. Was Jose perfect? No. We know, and this I don't think is in dispute, that he treated the boys bad. He was very volatile toward them. He expected a lot from them. He held them to high standards. He humiliated them when they let him down. He emotionally and verbally was not good to them. I don't think that's really in dispute. What is in dispute is whether he sexually molested them. And it's in huge dispute. And I'm going to tell you why. First of all, after the murders took place, after months, by the way, of free spending, because remember, once they were gone, they could buy and do anything they wanted. They spent $700,000. Let me tell you a few things they bought. A Porsche. They bought Rolexes, restaurants, one restaurant, drugs, clothing. They basically were on a complete spending spree. And I think it was very euphoric for them. This was the first time they were totally free of Jose Menendez's thumb on them, controlling what they could and couldn't do from a monetary standpoint. And they took full advantage of this. And this was partying. You know, they went down to, I think it was Monterey, where they spent a lot of time in hotels there, partying it up. These were not grieving children, saddened at what had just happened. But remember, I think it's important to think about where Jose came from and what he had done, and seeing, you know, concern over what these boys were going to be. Remember, these boys were involved in a burglary theft situation, and they got caught. They were literally going into other mansions and stealing from other individuals, burglarizing these places in the middle of the night. And they got caught. What did Jose do? Came to the rescue again, bailed them out with money, paid off everybody. Just imagine, I was thinking, I don't know how it would feel to work that hard and build so much and feel like your boys were spoiled, rotten, and were rotten to the core. Taking advantage, you know, tennis lessons and fancy cars and freedom, and it just wasn't enough that they had to rebel by stealing, that they had to plagiarize. Listen, there is not one thing I have read about these boys that is good, except for they had a decent serve in tennis. These boys, from all accounts, were not good humans. Now, we always say it, I say it all the time, apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I don't know whether it was partially their environment combined with, their gene pool, but these boys were rebellious. They were liars, cheats, and thieves, and became murderers. Now, I want to talk about the sexual abuse because this is really key. After the murders, again, Eric, guilty conscience, he goes to a therapist named Dr. Aziel. Dr. Aziel, he ends up confiding in him, telling them about the murders. Tells Lyle. They both go in. They begin having therapy and telling everything about the murders, laying it out. This is another reason why I say this is an open and shut case. When you have the perpetrators admitting on tape what they've done and going into the detail necessary to make it make sense. And that's what they did. And you know what they said the motive was? They said the motive was basically being out from under the financial thumb of their father, and their mother, they said, was so depressed anyway and had issues with substance abuse that she might as well go too, because she'd be even more miserable if he was gone. So we're just going to take them both. That, in a nutshell, paraphrasing, is their motive. What a perfect time when you have client privilege with your therapist. What a perfect time to tell the truth. To say, listen, we were sexually abused. This was horrible what we went through. We couldn't take it anymore. Even if, you know, by that time, Lyle's story, remember, he had a lot of stories. But one of the stories was he wasn't abused past the age of 8. That's when Eric was abused, and Eric was abused the whole time. No matter which story you want to believe, and we're going to go over those stories a little bit, the bottom line is this was something that came to light, not before the therapist, but came to light in court under Leslie Abramson's guidance. Remember, Leslie Amerson had gotten somebody off just before this by using this, what many believe is an absolute ploy. You know, we're going to say you were sexually abused, and we are going to sell that narrative. But the boys never mentioned it prior, but all of a sudden it comes up in court. And this is the big problem. Now, recall, now there's new information, right? They're saying there's new information. We have a Menudo band member breach. Remember, Jose Menendez was in that business representing these bands, including Menudo. This band member now, decades later, everyone, 30 years approximately later, is now coming forward. But this is what's really interesting. It's at the same time he is working on a deal to do, you know, a docuseries / film, you know, a production opportunity. Just think how much more exciting and it would be to sell if you could say, oh, listen, and by the way, the Menendez brothers, their dad, he sexually assaulted me, took me to the house, sexually assaulted me. Mind you, there's zero proof of this. No maid, no gardener, you know, Kitty, you know, anything she had written. There's zero proof, zero proof. We got one person's word that I would suggest to you is not worth the paper it's written on due to the motive and the fact it's brought up 30 years later. All right, let's go to the other new piece of evidence, right, to consider. And that is a Xerox copy of communication between Eric Menendez and his cousin. Now recall, and this is what's critical, his cousin, who was the cousin, was on the stand in the trial. I've posted it many times on my Twitter, you know, very good looking young man, but again, huge substance abuse issue. He ended up overdosing. He never brought up that letter. Yes, he said, oh, Eric confided in me this, that, and the other about Jose's abuse. It's the perfect time to bring up the letter. And by the way, here's the letter that he wrote. How come this was never brought up at any point? At any point in any litigation until 30 years later. And again, it's a Xerox copy. There's no one that can confirm it because the party that was involved with it is deceased. Found in a drawer, purportedly. For me, the only moving thing, and I want to hear what everybody else says, but the only really moving part about this case is that you have family members that support their release. And I do find that, you know, sort of compelling. But then I started looking at some of these family members and their hatred for Jose. Not because Jose did anything to them in terms of sexual, but because they truly, truly did not like Jose. And remember also, there's other family members that don't support that. They're just not the vocal ones. They're not the ones that are making all the ruckus. So I think it's something important to consider. Also, I think we need to consider was this book that Lyle Menendez, he wasn't exactly a party to it. A woman befriended him while he was behind bars, as often happens. You know, these get married, these murderers get married, they have relationships, they have pen pals, they fall in love, other people fall in love with them, then they disappear. I mean, these people can get more girlfriends and lovers behind bars than they can get in the outside world. It's just really amazing. And this was written by one of these women, Norma Novelli. And, you know, it's been characterized as very one-sided. But again, everything's in his words, Lyle's words. This was the reason Lyle could not testify. It's kind of like what's happened with Karen Reed, right? Karen Reed's all over the place. She's Dateline, she's 2020, she's on many, many shows. And she's just burying herself with her own words. That's what Lyle did here. So he made it impossible for him to testify. Now, for those of you who have seen, and again, I've posted this many times on Twitter, it's interesting to see them on the stand because truly, they're compelling. They cry, their lip quivers, they're, you know, very emotional. It is a Oscar-winning performance, in my opinion, by both of them. And I say that because this wasn't their first go-around with Oscar-winning performances. Remember, when the police showed up because they called, right? They were out, they come back, and they realize, no, there's no police here. We've got to make the call. Lyle makes the 911 call while Eric sits in a panicked, you know, upset stupor, bawling his eyes out. Lyle, too. That's the first performance we see, because they've just shot their parents' heads off. That's a performance. That's not real. They reloaded. So I think that is just a very important point, that these boys were capable of these sort of theatrics. I always think this is an interesting picture, you know, when times, I guess, in their family was so much better. Essentially, there's no doubt they did the crime. There's no doubt it was premeditated. But I want to talk about the five stories that they told. You know, initially they said, no, we are 100% innocent. We didn't do this. We don't know who did it. Then remember, they came back and said, oh, you know what? It probably was the mob because of our father's involvement with movies and the connections he might have had. And so that brings me full circle to what we talked about at the beginning. Is that why they made this so heinous? Was it because they felt if we make it look this bad, maybe we could blame it on the mob? Of course, this would never be a mob style hit. He would have gotten hit in his vehicle, blown up, or shot in a place separate from the home. This is not a mob style hit, but maybe in their mind it was. I don't know. I think that really came into play later. I think this was about their seething anger, specifically Lyle's and Eric also being a part, but certainly the ringleader in this case was undoubtedly Lyle. Just a couple of more photos up here. Interestingly, a lot of people wonder what happened to everybody. This is Leslie Abramson now. People have tried to chase her down and get interviews and what are her thoughts and so forth. It's just interesting to see how the main characters involved in this case have really changed. And that includes, and I'm sorry, that looks so, so very dark, but that includes, of course, the Menendez brothers. Lyle without his toupee, completely bald now, and Eric, very much changed from these boys. Another story. And actually, Lyle tried to get people to lie about this, that, oh, yeah, the father abused girls. That was the first story, by the way, that he was abusive toward Lyle's girlfriend. That was what they tried to spin, and that's why they did this. Then they changed again. You know, no, they were molested. And again, this came out so much after, you know, clear into litigation, not with Barry Scheck, their first attorney, but later. And I would believe it was because Leslie was the one that came up with that plan. And that's what they rolled with, and that they were well versed in what they needed to say. So anyway, the question now is, where are we at now? Because D.A. Gascon, before he left, got this before a judge as his role as the district attorney. Now, you can't really reverse that. Even though Hochman is not in support of a resentencing hearing, it's going to happen, and it is going to happen. It's happening this Thursday and Friday, because this is a bed that Gascon made. And now the district attorney, the current one, has to lay in it. This happens a lot when people come into office and then they leave office. So what's going to happen? Well, it's going to be up to this judge. And I think it is the right thing to do to have this hearing. I think it is really important for everything to be heard by the judge, because if he just drops it because of the change of administration, it's going to look very political. It's going to seem wrong. So I think it's very important that he hear both sides, that he hear all these facts, because they are important. They are important, the heinousness of this crime, which in most states with the death penalty would have likely gotten them the death penalty, premeditated, everything they did. But another question is going to be, how have they been since they've been behind bars? Rehabilitation, that's a big consideration the judge has to consider. They've had violations, but they've been pretty minor. One was they didn't want to leave their cell. Another one had to do with contraband, tobacco, contraband cell phones, things like that. Pretty minor, not fighting, not, you know, trying to plan an escape, nothing that would be, you know, not cooking up crack cocaine, nothing huge like that. So pretty minor. But they've had violations. And I want to talk about, to be fair, what they've done that is very beautiful. They have taken the yard, the facility, and on the cement walls, they have painted a mural of San Diego. And their whole idea is, listen, if we're going to be here, let's see beautiful San Diego. And it's a beautiful mural. I posted that on my Twitter, too, because I think that is important to sort of present both sides. They've been incarcerated now about 35 years, around that. They are in there. I want to say their exact age because I know I have it written down. And I just turned my notepad. But they're in their 50s. I think they're like 53 and 56, if I recall correctly. Is that enough time? I say no. Kitty, no say, didn't get to be in their 50s. But a judge will decide, and hopefully they will look at all the facts and circumstances, and he will make a good decision. Remember, too, the heinousness. To think that these boys aren't capable of doing something like this again, I just can't. Anybody who is capable of blowing your parents' heads off, pretty much capable of a lot. So I don't even know if society is safe. And that's a big consideration. Imagine you're the judge and they both get released. They're pretty young. I mean, for those of you out here in your 50s, that's young. And what happens if they get in a domestic dispute, they have an issue with somebody? What happens if they do something bad to somebody again? Everybody's going to say, how could that judge let them out? Did he not see what they did? Did he not see how they covered it up? Did they not see how they lavishly spent? Can you imagine how everyone in the true crime world would not go bonkers if these guys ended up hurting or murdering somebody else? Remember, they've already done it once. I think that has to be the number one concern of this judge is, are they a danger to society based on their ability to commit the acts that they committed? We will see. You know I'm going to be watching it close. I'm going to look down and just see if there's any particular comments. Let me just put a couple up here. Yeah, that's right. I mean, think about that. Do you want them dating your daughter? Or sister-in-law, that's kind of one of the biggest things I think people need to consider. That's what that judge needs to think about. Do you want them in your town? Do you want them in your school? Do you want them working somewhere around your relatives? It's such a great comment. Let me just pull up a couple others here. I'm not sure what Caroline's referring to. Monarch, hello. I think I missed the first part of that conversation, so that's why I don't know. Okay, this person says, it's Zoe. Zoe says, I don't believe they are a danger. You might be right, Zoe. I cannot agree with that, personally. I just, the amount of evil it takes to do that to anyone, what they did, put a shotgun in your mom's face, behind your dad's head, and cowardice, just such cowards, not face to face, not getting a fight or an argument, you know, not man up to hijack them from behind. That's a special kind of evil. And for that reason, I just can't see it that you could release them in good conscience. But Zoe, I do really appreciate your input, because a lot of people believe what you believe, that they're not a danger to society. Let's see, not even A-class actors are this convincing, and many experts agreed in terms of believing their testimony in regard to what horrific things their father did to them, not saying it justifies them. Well, a couple of things, Integrity, because I appreciate your comment. Think about this. So are we going to say now that revenge killing is okay? Don't get me wrong, I believe in the death penalty for anybody who sexually assaults and abuses a child. We have it here in Florida now, and I believe it's Idaho that just legislated it as well. So believe me, I'm all for it. But I don't think you can have revenge in these situations, because guess who's not here to defend themselves? Kitty and Jose. This literally, there is zero proof of this. Now, there's not zero proof that Jose was hard on him, embarrassed him, humiliated them, you know, when it came to tennis and some other things. But to think that that now extends to sexual assault, and that they wouldn't admit it before a counselor, knowing that the information couldn't get out. I do want to talk about that just for 1 second. You might be saying, well, Jen, it's not supposed to get out. It's attorney client or doctor client privilege. How did it get out? Well, it got out for a couple of reasons. First of all, the doctor's girlfriend was listening in, so it wasn't necessarily confidential, but I still don't think it would have gotten in but for this fact. And this is that Lyle told the doctor, if he revealed any of this, he would kill him. He was going to kill him. He threatened him. And because of that, now you have a crime and you have a whole different set of parameters. And that's what opened the door for all these tapes to come in at the end of the day. So the girlfriend making them known to law enforcement. So it really wasn't confidential. Can't be confidential if somebody's listening and the doctor knows she's listening, because they have discussions about it. And remember, this doctor was so terrified. I mean, he took everything. He said, we're going to tape this. He took everything to his house. He had things under lock and key. You know why? He didn't want this to get out, because he was terrified that these boys were going to kill him. Simple. Let me just take a couple of more. Kara B says, they still don't take responsibility for what they did, still pulling the essay card, but no core evidence of essay. 100% agree with you, Kara. There just isn't any proof of what they're saying. And, you know, it's just wrong for them to, you know, if they came forward and said, listen, that whole sexual assault thing was all lies and baloney, Abramson came to us and said, this is how we can get you off. And we rolled with it and we're actors and we did this and that. I think it'd be different. But remember, they're still going with self-defense. You can't premeditate self-defense. You don't go buy the guns and plan where you're going to bury them and plan an alibi. But you're not successful at carrying it out, but you plan it. Mm-mm. So huge problem with self-defense. Somebody wrote something interesting. Here we go. Me either, integrity. There is no integrity, I don't think, for these brothers. There was an integrity when they were breaking into houses, mansions, and thieving from people that lived and were much like them, right? To me, this was really a in your face. And then they lie and about everything. So there's no integrity with them. I just don't know how they can be trusted. Anyway, I just wanted to say, everybody, thanks for being here. I know we had planned on 10 and I had to move it up for a particular reason, but I'm so glad you guys joined tonight. And normally we'll try to stick with the 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock show. It's kind of my favorite time. Hope to catch people on their commutes in some places and people after their kids get home from school and they give them a snack. But I appreciate you taking time out of your prime time and joining us here. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much. And for those of you who do like the channel, I hope you join, subscribe. Would so appreciate it. Doesn't cost anything. I think our member charge is $1 a month or something like that. But we just appreciate you being here and being in the community and listening in. Thank you, my mods, who are the best in the business. We have a whole community. We're like a little family on the back end of everything. So I thank each of you for being here. Thanks again. Until next time, may justice be served.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.